You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Through conversations with investors and entrepreneurs, Unseen Upside by Cambridge Associates explores the human impact of investing. Season 4 focuses on exciting healthcare advancements, promising to improve outcomes and create resilient, patient-centric systems, blending technology and compassion. Meet the minds behind innovation shaping the future of medicine, from drug discovery to the role of AI. Uncover the Unseen Upside, available now.
The Large Neutron Collider podcast is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Large Neutron Collider podcast, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I am Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is the super geeky tech head Jonathan Strickland.
Hey, it's spooky season. Boo, boo.
Not, is it? It's April.
Well, according to our news, it is, but we'll get to that.
I mean, I guess. I was going to say, I mean, April Fools can be pretty spooky, but.
It's fun because a couple of our news items tie into spooky stuff. One in particular ties into Halloween. So this episode, I think, is going to be a big, happy, warm, fuzzy hug to all of you out there who keep Halloween in their hearts all year long. I'm looking at you, Shaylee. All right. But before we get into any of that, I got a question for you. Okay. Now, Ariel, you might not know this, but you and I host a geeky podcast.
Wait, we do?
Yeah. That's not the question.
We do?
That's just a statement of fact.
I wasn't aware.
Yeah, I've been recording it this whole time. So the question I have is what's a different geeky podcast you listen to other than our own? And you can name more than one if you like.
So a lot of times when I listen to podcasts, it's kind of the stuff where it's like fiction, right? So I really loved Limetown. I wouldn't necessarily say that was geeky. It was kind of spoofing on NPR a little bit, and it was kind of scary. So it's not really geeky. As far as geeky specific stuff, I really like the Adventure Zone. I really like Mabim Bam. I really like Sawbones. Those three that I listen to from the McElroy family are really good. I really like Sawbones, so I'm very, very far behind. Other than that, occasionally Critical Role, but it's the episodes are so long. They're so long.
Yeah.
I normally have that kind of time.
I've only watched like little excerpts on YouTube of Critical Role, so completely devoid of context where I don't know anyone's characters or what situation they're in. And so the stuff I watch is funny, but it's clearly not as funny as it would be if I were, you know, more heavily invested in the show. But like you,
yeah,
it's one of those things. Two things. One is that The episodes are so long, and they are so many episodes, particularly if you want to go back to the beginning where they weren't recording their sessions early on. That was literally them just getting together and playing D&D, and they only started recording later on. So there's all this backstory the characters have that you just kind of get parceled out now and then because those don't exist as episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. Other than that, I mean, I've listened to a lot of geeky stuff. If you count Serial as geeky, but I really liked, the Stitcher has a couple of seasons of a Wolverine fictional podcast with like celebrity voice actors. That's actually a really fun story. It's not happy because it's Wolverine, but it's really good. And then the other one that I absolutely adore, and they occasionally come out with stuff, but it's not often, is the Thrilling Adventure Hour, which is old time radio theater, new time radio theater in an old time style, something like that. Again, with a lot of famous actors, voice actors, but they do like sci-fi, fantasy, horror, goofy, funny comedy stuff. And it's like, it hits me in all of my sweet, happy places.
Yeah, my favorite of those, like they stopped doing them regularly years ago. Like they had been recording live. That was another show that had started off as a live show in Los Angeles, and only later did they start recording them and releasing them as podcasts. And most of the time, the episodes are fairly self-contained. There might be references to earlier stuff, but it's not like if you miss an episode, you have no idea what's going on. But I can't remember the names of the characters because it's been so long since they've been publishing, but it was the husband-wife team that I love so much.
Frank and Sadie Doyle.
Yes, and Sadie, they're a wealthy, hard-drinking pair of socialites who also solve supernatural mysteries. And I loved it because the actress playing Sadie would find incredibly funny ways to mispronounce words in a very snooty fashion. And it was my favorite.
Yes. Oh, great. I love that. That's Paget Brewster. And then yes, Paul F. Tompkins did the voice of Frank and Sadistic Doyle. I loved it because they did a spoof on like all of Stephen King. So Stand By Me, It, that was absolutely hilarious. My favorite, bit on that show though was Sparks Nevada, which was their cowboy western on Mars, and Mark Evan Jackson voiced that, and Mark Gagliardi did the voice of Croach the Tracker, who was the actual Martian. I just thought it was brilliant and well done. You could tell these people had a lot of fun working together.
Yeah, and those are nice people too. I've met several of them, and they're absolute joys and very gracious when you talk about how much you love their show. Yeah, those are great picks. One I would throw in there, although I haven't watched it in a very long time, but I used to be addicted to it, was Welcome to Night Vale. I actually have a couple of Night Vale posters hanging on the wall behind me. I've always thought that was a very fun show. I definitely need to get back into it because that show started off as sort of feeling like it was a bunch of separate one-shot episodes, but it turned out that they were building the foundation for an ongoing story. It's just that it wasn't evident early on, and then as it goes on, it really does become a continuing unfolding story, and I definitely need to get back into it.
It's definitely a kind of bizarre that I had to like listen to it in spits and starts because sometimes it got really upsetting.
It's mostly a comedy show, but it has a lot of melancholy in it. And there are times where characters you really like don't make it. I mean, like, it happens.
Are they still going? Are they?
Yep. They actually just had a live show in Atlanta last month.
Oh, wow. I did not realize that. Because I thought that Cecil, the main guy, had left.
He's still there, but yeah, he's kind of winding down apparently to take care of his own health. So, but those are some other geeky shows that you probably should check out if you're not familiar with them. There are lots up more. I mean, like Hello from the Magic Tavern is another one that has been around for ages and ages that I like to listen to. And I'm way behind on that one too, but Shay got me hooked on that. And so I'm very slowly making my way. That's also one that has a huge backlog to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was about to say, name a couple more, Jonathan. So you just did. So now I can't say a couple more. I mean, I could, but it's there is so much geek podcast out there. It's actually quite fantastic, even though it makes this space a little crowded. I love it.
Yeah, me too. Well, let's talk about some news.
Okay. Our first news is that the cast of The Next Generation is coming back for season 3 of Picard. And probably not all of them. I don't know if we're getting Tasha Yar or Barkley, but we're getting a few more back for season 3.
I don't know if Will Wheaton is coming back either. But most of them were announced, but I did not see Will Wheaton's name listed on there, which is awkward because Will Wheaton also hosts a post-Picard show kind of thing where he's talked to Patrick Stewart several times. And Red Letter Media has cut together some videos that make it look like he's just got a dead stare as he's seeing all the names, but his name hasn't shown up. But yeah, it's interesting. And I don't know, I'm seeing different camps fall down on whether this is a good thing and it's something to be excited about, or is it a sign that the show is kind of in the weeds and needs a boost of nostalgia in order to make it relevant. As you know, I don't follow it. I don't have Paramount Plus, so I haven't been watching. And everything I see is filtered through someone else.
I watched season 1. I really want to watch season 2, but I'm trying to get through Discovery first, because sometimes it does matter what order you watch it in. If you watch the little shorts that Paramount Plus does, it does matter when you watch those. So I haven't seen season 2 yet, but it's only a 3-season run. And Jeri Ryan, who plays 7 of 9, says that it was only ever supposed to be 3 seasons, a limited run show. So I don't know. Get someone saying that it needs that boost of nostalgia to keep going feels weird when they were already planning on 3 and done, unless that's just not truth.
Well, the way that I was seeing it, and again, this is all from other people because I have not watched the show. I haven't drawn my own conclusions. But the way I've seen it framed is that these are the only shows that are getting a lot of traction on the platform. So these are the shows that are really valuable to make the platform work, and that there's at least a growing concern about the Star Trek stuff in particular from certain segments of the fandom. But let's face it, one of the issues about fandoms in general is that you're always going to have sections that will object to anything that goes in a new direction and others who will embrace it. I'll be honest, I'm definitely one of those who's gonna get a little antsy the further away you get from what I feel was the spirit of Star Trek, because I'm like, this doesn't feel like Star Trek to me. As much as I love some of the movies don't feel like Star Trek. Not the series. The series feels very, very different from the movies. And that applies both to the original series and the Next Generation stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I like a lot of it, but the thing is, even in the series, I didn't super care for Enterprise. Not every series is for everybody. Some people don't like Deep Space Nine. Some people don't like Voyager. Some people don't like The Next Generation, even though I love it. I mean, that's what I grew up with. It just has that nostalgic spot in my heart. I even think Discovery has gone more towards the way I expect Star Trek to feel. Once you get past that first season, these later seasons are definitely more aligned with Star Trek and Gene Roddenberry's ideals and all of those things. I've enjoyed Picard. It is a little different and it is a little weird, but I also enjoyed Deep Space Nine. And I would say that was a departure from standard Star Trek television series.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Well,
it was more political.
Something that doesn't look like it's going to be a departure at all. It's just going to go even harder the way it's been going for a while. Is the next Stranger Things season. So when we first started putting this episode together, we were marveling over the weird live stream countdown they had to a trailer reveal where you saw this smoking clock that turned out to be in the middle of Santa Monica with people occasionally looking at it. And it looked like it was experiencing some sort of glitchiness. And then we got the trailer. What did you think of the trailer, Ariel?
Well, first of all, I got to say, there was a dude who was in a lab coat who was exploring that clock. I didn't watch the entire live stream, but I wonder how long they hired him to stand there and look at the clock. I could probably look that up if I wanted to. The trailer looked fun. It confirmed a lot of things I suspected after season three, and then we kind of found out from, like, media interviews and stuff like that, like Hopper still being around.
Which, by the way, all of that is a spoiler to me because I've only seen season one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. No, everyone talked about it already. I've heard it so many times.
The trailer looks interesting. It is weird to me. The villain that they reveal in the trailer looks more human than any of the previous villains, which
he's got a little bit of weird. Like Swamp Thing mixed with Doc Ock thing going on.
Yeah, it's or like the Borg Queen. It's weird.
Yeah.
And on one hand, I'm kind of like, I really liked these Eldritch horror type things that were, you know, it was either Eldritch horrors or people that were the bad guys in the earlier seasons of Stranger Things. So I don't know if it makes it feel more cheesy or more frightening to me to have a sentient speaking human person. Yeah. I mean, but it looks good. I like the way in the trailer that they accounted for having to shut down for the pandemic.
Yeah.
Which is spoiler for anyone who hasn't seen the trailer. Not much of a spoiler. We tried to get along for a while. Like one simple sentence solves the 2-year gap and all of these young teenagers now being adults. Right. Or they're still playing teenagers, I'm sure. They look like adults.
They're in high school. They're supposed to be. In fact, I think, according to the article anyway, that the gap is only supposed to be 6 months. Whether or not they reflect that in the series, they just like, wow, people sure did hit those growth spurts. I don't know.
I would say.
Well,
Finn Wolfhard definitely looks older.
Yeah. Well, Ariel, I had one more story to go through, but I'm going to save it because we're running long for the segment. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a bit about a night that moons people.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
We'll be right back.
Jonathan.
Yeah.
That's not what we're talking about. I mean, did you watch a different show than I did?
Well, I
guess in certain
contexts.
You've broken me. Yeah.
The reason why I even made that joke is that I once had, I don't know if it was a What the Comic or if it was a Mad Magazine, but I used to have like a comic book or something along those lines where they made that joke where the Moon Knight is this guy who runs up to people, pulls his pants down, moons them, and then runs away giggling. But no, that is not what the Moon Knight is about. The Moon Knight series obviously is on Disney Plus now. The first two episodes have gone out for us. By the time you hear this, the third episode will be out. And we just thought we'd talk a little bit about our response to it. So I know how I felt about it, but I'm very curious because we have not talked about this. I do not know what Ariel thought, and it could go either way. She might just feel middle of the road. So what was your reaction to Moon Knight?
I like it way more than I anticipated. Like, way more. I think it might be tying Loki for my second. Now, this is early, right? Because Marvel doesn't always carry through the awesome through an entire series or movie. Right now, it's tying Loki for my second favorite Disney Plus Marvel show.
Behind WandaVision being first, I imagine.
Yeah, behind WandaVision being first. It is scary at times, but not too scary. Mm-hmm. And there's action, and there's blood, but there's not too much. And there's comedy, but there's not too much. It's all very balanced, and I love the fact that because it's dealing with Egyptian mythology and things like that, they've got a crew, they've got a director and writers and crew that are all Egyptian and familiar with that and really excited to look at this mythos in a non-cliche way. And it really shows, and it makes it such intriguing television.
Yeah, I'm glad that they're taking those steps to try and make sure that their depiction of Egyptian mythology is exciting and rings true and isn't just exploitation. I mean, obviously, like when you think of Egyptian mythology, I don't know about you. When I think of Egyptian mythology, I'm often thinking about the stuff I would see if I were to go to a museum in London. But obviously, that means I'm looking at stuff that in many cases was just literally lifted without any consent from anyone in Egypt.
Yeah.
And then brought to London to show off. Like, you know, the museums in general, a lot of museums in general have this issue, but British museums in particular are somewhat infamous for it, for this, for the appropriation of cultural artifacts without first getting actual permission to take them. And so that you could easily have that same sort of issue where you had cultural appropriation and kind of a very narrow view of what that means. So to bring people on who are experts who can help guide, I think is really important. I think you make a great point about the tone. I think the tone is great. I was feeling the whole time I was watching, I was like, I wouldn't describe it as scary. I would describe it as incredibly creepy, but in the best way, like the way that a classic creepy horror movie, not a gross horror movie, not one that's all about jump scares, but a classic, like almost like one of those old English creepy Hammer films. That's what this feels like to me. And I love it.
Yes. But the thing is like, if you're listening to this and you say, I don't like creepy things, I don't want to watch a horror show. It's not like there are some aspects of that, but the show itself is so much more. I also think that the person that they're presenting as the big villain right now is super well written because he's the best. I think we've talked about this before. The best villains to me are the ones that believe wholeheartedly in what they're doing and that they're doing it for good.
Yeah.
Even though what they're doing is horrific.
Yeah. It's what made Thanos such a, I'm sure. I mean, not that I know for certain, but based on all the trailers, I feel pretty confident about it. And, but that I'm pretty sure that the Scarlet Witch, that Wanda, is going to be at least a villain in Doctor Strange, if not the primary antagonist. And her reasons for doing what she does are totally understandable. And you could see how she would be dedicated to seeing that vision out. Haha, that's almost a pun, but seeing that vision out at any cost. Like, you can sort of understand that. And that's what makes her so formidable and terrifying, because she 100% believes in what she's doing and is committed to seeing it through. So same sort of thing here. Like, the character, you get the feeling like this character isn't like a mustache twirling, hand wringing villain. This character believes in what he does, and that's what makes him so incredibly dangerous.
And he's not going, I don't want to spoil anything for people who haven't watched it, but he's not going into these situations blind or with vague assumptions from other people. Like, he's going off of real experience and knowledge. I will have to say, like, I know when they were putting out all the clips from Moon Knight prior to it launching, I was worried that they had spoiled some major moments for me, and they didn't. Looking at the series and the things that I saw in the previews that I have now seen in the episodes, it wasn't a huge spoiler.
Right. Now, in the comics, just as in the series, the main character, the alter ego of the Moon Knight, is someone who has dissociative identity disorder, or what we used to call multiple personality disorder. And so this character has multiple personalities. And the one that we encounter at first is the one that you saw in all the trailers, known as Steven. The other one we've met so far is Mark. But in the comics, there are others as well. But my question to you is one that my wife and I chatted about this. We both feel like we're both hoping that Steven remains the primary character that we are connected to throughout the rest of the series, because we think he's more interesting than Mark is.
I mean, Steven is more interesting, though the accent still weighs on me a little bit.
That's kind of why I like it even more, is because that accent is so terrible.
I was going to mention something similar, though. I think it's hard to say that Steven is more interesting. Steven is definitely more of an underdog than Mark Spector is. I do find it really interesting that in the comics, Mark Spector is the prime personality, and all these others are ones that pop up to do different things. Like, he's got Jake Lockley, who is a cab driver, who's kind of like the informant, and he's got Mr. Knight, I think it is.
Yeah, that's the detective. We saw Mr. Knight briefly.
Yes, we have already seen him. I was thrilled. That moment was so cool to me. It seems to me like in the series that Mark is still the prime personality, and I don't know why or how Steven is now thinking that he's had to be a personality long enough to get a job, get an apartment, get neighbors, all that other stuff. But Mark has this whole history from like before this blank slate of Steven that I wonder if it was like a deep cover thing that happened. I really don't know. I'm just spitballing here. But it is interesting to me, and I find myself asking every episode, why is it like this? Also, like, with his love interests, it doesn't line up with the comics, but it might line up with some other comics that kind of lines up with... I've fallen down the fan conspiracy rabbit hole, Jonathan.
I actually went out to the point where I didn't go out, but I used I used some credits I had to purchase some digital comics. I actually purchased some Moon Knight comics and read them. And so they're fascinating, by the way, because a lot of them are trying to capture the disjointed feeling that the character has. So there are comics where you're like, you feel like you're just getting part of a story, and it's really well done, but because it's just part, my brain is like, but I want to know what happened.
Yeah, that's why I jumped around two towers.
But still, it's really neat.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I think I'm definitely going to be watching the rest of it. It's interesting because I've heard rumors that one of the reasons we have yet to see a trailer for, or even a teaser for, Thor Love and Thunder is potentially because of something that happens in Moon Knight. And also there's the potential that Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, that events in that are going to have a big impact on Thor as well. What I say to that, to you, Disney, Marvel, Kevin, is that maybe this means you're putting out too much stuff in too short amount of time.
Hey, don't make enemies.
You know, maybe just spread it out a bit so that way you can actually promote your upcoming projects without spoiling the ones that also haven't come out yet.
I like instant gratification. I'm currently enjoying it as long as they're flying. Now, I know, like, I worked on an independent film with some film students recently, and they were going on about how Marvel needs to hire like a show Bible runner because they are putting out so much stuff, like someone just to keep the story Bible. I really like it. I also heard rumor that Daredevil might show up again in Moon Knight. So a lot of this is just...
That would be interesting.
Like, once again, falling down the fan rabbit hole. Yeah, I really expected Moon Knight to be closer to in tone to like Daredevil or Jessica Jones or Luke Cage. And it's not. I would still say it's PG-13 just because there is a little bit of like violence and just high level concepts that might be hard for a kid to grasp.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I think like this is like teenager and older kind of territory. Like, I'm sure as a kid, I would have found this fascinating, but it would have been one of those things that if I were an adult and watching it again, I'd be like, oh, I totally didn't pick up on all the stuff that was going on. But then I'm also stupid. So that can happen to me next year watching a movie that I watched this year. So don't listen to me on that one. But we're almost out of time for this whole segment. But before we get to that, before we move on and take a break, there is one other little thing I just wanted to touch on. Is the thing that I pushed from the last segment, but I feel like we have to talk about it because what the heck? The Mary Sue reports that there is going to be a Spirit Halloween movie. So for those who are not familiar, Spirit Halloween is a pop-up store that appears in late summer, early fall, and it's all about Halloween. It takes over spaces that have been emptied out from other retail establishments where like they went out of business and they cleared out. Spirit Halloween will take over the space, operate there for a few months, close up shop after Halloween, and then disappear. And now they're making them. There's going to be a Spirit Halloween movie.
Yeah, with Christopher Lloyd. He's making a comeback, man. Well, I don't know. Maybe he has been doing stuff. I haven't seen him in much of the things that I've been watching.
Yeah, he's really been working a lot recently.
Yeah. So it's him, it's Rachel Lee Cook, and a bunch of other people. And it's set in the past because it's taking over a Circuit City. The store in the movie is taking over a Circuit City, right?
Or at least that's what it said in the article. I don't know if that's really true or if that was just the writer making a reference to their own childhood.
Joke. Okay. But yeah, sounds like this is what happens when I read too quickly.
It sounds to me like it's going to have sort of a Five Nights at Freddy's vibe to it. Like it talks about the animatronics in the store coming to life and terrorizing some kids who are locked in the store overnight. And I'm feeling like, there's definitely a Five Nights at Freddy's influence here. It also feels like it's going to be meant to be kind of a gateway horror movie for like the kind of horror movie that kids can watch, but then gets kids interested in horror movies. I think of things like Gremlins falling into that category. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a movie that kids could watch. I watched it as a kid that could get you interested in horror movies. The Gate is another one, although The Gate is like a billion times more bizarre than Gremlins is.
I've never watched The Gate. I know that Mary Sue mentions The Goonies, which I could definitely get a Goonies feel from it, although I wouldn't count The Goonies as horror at all.
No, it's adventure.
I'm kind of interested to watch this. I'm kind of really too. Interested to watch
like,
this.
Here's the thing. Like, part of me is like, man, this is just going to be terrible. But then part of me would also say, you know what would be terrible? Making a movie out of the board game Clue. And that would turn out to be one of my favorite movies of all time. So what do I know?
Yeah. I'm still sad we never got the Tetris trilogy that we kept being promised.
Yeah. Well, maybe someday, Ariel. But until then, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, we're going to tell you about some wacky mashups we made.
Oh.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
All right, these mashups are totally madness, Jonathan.
They are. One of them we picked was the Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, or Doctor Strange in general, because those trailers have been coming out fast and furious, but not like the film series Fast and Furious.
Yes.
Like we got the Dream trailer last week, so it's pretty much at a fever pitch of the marketing. Whether or not it pays off, I don't know. I've already seen people suggest that Doctor Strange might not perform quite as well at the box office as some of the other films, which is weird because I thought the trailers look really interesting, and the possibility of seeing Marvel characters from other franchises pop up is also interesting to me. Like, we already saw that had a big effect with Spider-Man No Way Home that I still haven't seen. But, mm-hmm.
you will by the next time we record.
Yes, because I actually received it today. It came in the mail today. I wasn't able to watch it because I had to work.
Oh, and the Batman comes out soon, too. So you can watch that soon, too.
Like April 18th. So I'm looking forward to seeing that, too. But yeah, so one of them is Doctor Strange, which, if you're not familiar with the character, is a Marvel Sorcerer Supreme, a former surgeon who ends up getting sorceress powers after trying to seek out ways to heal himself because he suffers terrible injuries after a car accident, then becomes one of Earth's mightiest heroes, protecting it against cosmic threats, like stuff way bigger than the Avengers level typically. And the new movie is kind of him reckoning with the fact that he done messed things up from Spider-Man No Way Home, and has opened up all these potential gateways to different parallel universes. It's also where we see the Wanda from WandaVision continuing to pursue her goal. I'm really curious to see how the movie handles that and is able to explain things to an audience that did not watch WandaVision. Like, I know a lot of Marvel fans watch everything, but not everyone does.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that they pulled in, like, her kids into the trailer.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder, because of timing and how fast kids grow up, if they filmed that while they were filming WandaVision.
Well, you know, the rumor was that Doctor Strange was to appear at the final shot of the final episode of WandaVision, but it was cut. And that he was originally going to be there when she was there at the cabin to apparently confront her. And that would have led into the Multiverse of Madness. But they decided to cut that. Probably makes sense, because I have a feeling that Spider-Man No Way Home was supposed to be like the actual stepping stone toward this particular confrontation. Mm-hmm. And because that had not yet come out, that would have made it really confusing. So,
yeah,
that's my guess. But what's the other thing we're mashing up today, Ariel?
Singing in the Rain. And the reason is because it turned 70 this week on Monday. It
Happy
turned
70 years old. So, what's Singing in the Rain?
It's this dude named Don Lockwood, who's like a cowboy roper guy and silent film star, who finds out that the films are going to have sound, and his fake girlfriend slash co-star is going to not do well because she talks like this. Not exactly, but not too far off.
Very high-pitched, very squeaky, very heavily accented. It's kind of like Audrey from Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah. And so they try to film the Something Cavalier. I can't remember the name of it. Don't, classic film buffs, don't smack me. It's been a bit. They try to film this movie that's with sound with Don and Lena, and it doesn't go well. Just a myriad of things go wrong. They try to muffle her voice. They try to get her audio to go well. She can't stay on mic. There's just a ton of problems. And so they find this other girl, Kathy, and they basically have her sub in as the voice of Lena. But there's a whole bunch of song and dance and dream sequences, and they turn the Dashing Cavalier into the Dancing Cavalier. And it's just ridiculous.
And delightful.
Yeah, delightful. And it has brilliant songs in it, an amazing comedy, and you know, a good love story and beautiful dancing. And it's just a piece of art.
It really is. It's one of those movies that I've seen probably a dozen times, and I can still watch it from beginning to end. There is a very long ballet sequence because it is a Gene Kelly movie. So there has to be a very long ballet sequence, which feels a little gratuitous at points. But like the songs, like Singing in the Rain is just, I mean, if you've ever seen the shot of Gene Kelly hanging off a lamppost in the rain, that's from this movie. One of the most iconic images of classic Hollywood. The film came out in 1952. And this is like one of those benchmarks of Hollywood cinema, which is why everyone makes such a big deal of it turning 70. It's kind of like movies like Wizard of Oz. You know, it's one of those that really was a foundational picture in cinematic history. So if you are not familiar with it, if you've never seen it, I recommend you check it out. You might, if you're like me, feel tempted to fast forward through the ballet sequence.
You might. Something else important, Don Lockwood in the movie has a best friend named Cosmo Brown, played by Donald O'Connor. He's kind of the comedic relief. He's brilliant. He is just he's physically brilliant. He's got a great voice. He's adorable. He's like on my list of people who are way too old that I've never met, only one of whom is still alive. Donald O'Connor, Danny Kaye, and Dick Van Dyke, when they were young, I have crushes on past them.
Gotcha. I mean, she has a crush on a past character I played. Not me, but a character I played. Well, so Ariel's judgment is questionable. What?
Jonathan, that's mean. Well, you know what? It's true because and anybody who listens to my mashup is going to know how questionable my judgment is.
Well, with that, I think we have to launch right into your mashup. Or do you want me to go first?
No, it's fine. It's called Slinging in the Strange. Yes, Dr. Strange has sling rings. Okay. Wong Lockwood is a magician and silent film star who can't stand his co-star slash fake girlfriend, Lena Mordo. Beyond her not being a nice, spoiled person, he can't even stand the sound of her voice. I mean, it's horrible. Then one day, Wong learns that the pictures that he's been acting in are going to have sound, and he thinks he's finally going to be rid of his fake girlfriend, Linda. Because you see, back in the olden days, these big film houses, production companies used to want the stars to look like they were actually dating because it gave the audience more to invest in. All right. So the night that Wong learns that films are going to start having sound, he tells his roommate, Stephen Cosmo Strange, about his new revelation. The problem is that Cosmo heard that if the sound picture that Wong and Lena are working on flops, it'll be the end of not just her career, but Wong's as well. And Wong will have to go back to being a party children's party magician. This is devastating to Wong Lockwood. But Stephen Cosmos Strange tells Wong Lockwood not to worry. He has been practicing real magic and will help out. Wong doesn't believe him. There's not real magic until the day of the film shoot. Whenever Lena goes to speak, it's a voice that most definitely isn't Lena's coming out. But each time that occurs, other odd things happen. Portals open up around the studio, cloaks fly like they have minds of their own, time flies forward and backwards. Wong and the studio decide these side effects are making the movie worse than Lena's voice was alone, and they beg Cosmo to stop. So he does. And instead, they all go on a search to find a voice actress to replace Lena's voice, but not her beloved face. They find a woman named Kathy Palmer, who fits the bill. However, Cosmo falls in love with Kathy Palmer and doesn't want her to play second fiddle to Lena, so he tries to conjure a world where everyone thinks she is Lena, but that throws Wong, Stephen Cosmo Strange, and Kathy Palmer into a weird other verse where everything is a musical in a nightclub and everyone is dancing all the time, and it's also raining there all the time, and the only way to get out is to sing the right words and open a portal back to their real world. They try every song they can think of, Make 'em Laugh, Fit as a Fiddle, Good Morning, and even a song called Singing in the Rain, and none of it works. And the longer they stay in the nightclub world, the further they descend into madness until they are babbling about Noah having peony pinkies or Moses supposing his toes are roses. But I mean, that's just nonsense. But it was just that nonsense that freed them from this realm. All with fresh ideas of how to invigorate their film by making it a musical and having Kathy sing for Lena. And everything seemed to finally be going well, but Stephen Cosmo Strange still did not want Kathy to play second fiddle. And he had one more trick up his sleeve. The night of the premiere of the movie, he raised the curtain as Kathy was singing for Lena and the audience saw her. But as he did, as he pulled the curtain string, he also activated the Eye of Agamotto and reset time. Back to before motion pictures had sound. And no one remembered anything except for Cosmo. And this time he vowed he'd do better. The end.
Wow, I love it.
Thank you.
I love it. Oh, you had so many fun Singing in the Rain references. Moses supposes his toes are roses, but Moses supposes erroneously.
Moses erroneously. Moses, he knows his toes aren't roses, but Moses supposes his toes to be. Or as Moses supposes his toes. That's my favorite song from the movie.
I love that movie. So I was actually looking before we started getting into our mashups because I've mentioned this before, but it no longer works, but I have a capacitance electronic disc player. A CED player, which was a technology that very briefly tried to compete with VHS. You could not record to it. It is kind of like a record, except it's in a plastic sleeve and you put the whole plastic sleeve into the machine, kind of like you would put a cassette into a VHS player. But it has a disc inside it and it would actually read the content of the disc using a stylus, just like a record player, except it's using electric capacitance and then plays back video. You could only store about an hour's worth of content per side. So with most movies, you had to take it out, flop it over, and put it back in to get the second half of the movie. Well, one of the movies we owned was Singing in the Rain. And that's how I watched it so many times when I was a kid. So I was going to show you that, but I didn't want to be disruptive during your actual mashup, which was delightful.
And thank you. No, that's really cool. I wish
Wong
I had
Lockwood made player. Me like I Ariel saw, none of you could see. I had to suppress laughing out loud just from Wong Lockwood.
Because I mean, you know, it's okay. So Dawn falls in love with Kathy Palmer. Mm-hmm. Not Palmer. Christine Palmer is the girlfriend from Doctor Strange. Anyhow, Dawn falls in love with Kathy, not Cosmo, but in this, it just made better sense. So.
Yeah. It was interesting to me also that you kind of made Strange a supporting character, a very important supporting character, but the leading man is Wong, at least in the traditional sense.
Well, I mean, I think Wong deserves to be a leading man. He's awesome.
Agreed.
And two, in the story of Doctor Strange, at least in the first one, when he comes into the monastery, which I know that's not what it's called, but when he basically starts learning his magic.
Buddhist-style temple. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the troublemaker.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is serious and more straightforward, and he's the troublemaker. And I figured if he was the lead character, it would be harder to make him cause trouble. So that was my reasoning behind that.
Well, I thought it was great. I look forward. I'm going to do my mashup, but before we get to that, we're going to take another break because my mashup's pretty long. And here's the other thing, folks. After I do my mashup, I think we're going to have to unpack some stuff because my mashup includes references to other things that are not immediately apparent. And so I might have to explain some choices, kind of like what we just had, like our little post mortem on Ariel's mashup. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you'll get ready for my mashup.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
I'm ready.
Okay, well,
I shouldn't have hit my desk so many times.
Great audio. So we have this in common. So my title, it's not exactly the same, but it is Singing in the Strange. So here we go with Singing in the Strange. Gene Kelly has a problem. See, it's 1952, and he's on set for what will become a true classic American movie musical, Singin' in the Rain. He's playing Don Lockwood, a fictional silent movie era film star who is grappling with the challenges of film's transition to talking pictures. And obviously, he's going to do a lot of singing and a lot of dancing in it. So he pushes himself hard, expecting no less from his co-stars. But then, the problem happens. See, because Doctor Strange did that multiverse portal thingy in that Spider-Man movie. That is, I'm guessing that's what he's done because I still haven't seen Spider-Man. But, you know, it literally came in the mail today. So by the time this episode goes live, I will have seen it. I just haven't seen it while I'm doing this mashup. So I'm just making a big leap here that that's what happened. Okay, we're all on the same page. So we're going to just assume Strange made an oopsie in that movie. Well, the effects of that oopsie have spread far and wide. So far and wide that it's gone beyond the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's gone beyond Disney and Fox. It's stretched all the way to Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Pictures. And next thing you know, Gene Kelly falls plumb through a portal. Boom! He finds himself in Paris, France. The real one. But all around him are people singing and dancing. He immediately recognizes the music as that from An American in Paris. And he tries to get folks to stop dancing and singing and to talk to him, but they're all kind of locked into this wild singing and dancing thing and with either no way or no desire to break free of it. And they all get to a part of the song and they all look at him clearly waiting, and taken aback, he sings a little and the whole group starts up again. And Gene starts to feel really ill at ease, so he dashes off, noticing that the dancing and singing folks appear to be eyeing him with potential violence for abandoning them. He ducks down a Parisian alleyway behind him, and in rhythm, he hears, in song, an approaching throng. Oh no, even the story treatment is beginning to rhyme. He takes another corner, looking behind him, and doesn't even see that he's running smack dab into yet another portal. And he loses his footing, and he trips, and he falls to his hands and knees. And there, when he's on the ground on his hands and knees, he sees a pair of cartoonish feet belonging to a mouse. Oh no, he says, looking up. And sure enough, he sees in front of him a cartoon Jerry the Mouse, wearing a little crown. And yeah, somehow Gene Kelly has fallen into the 1945 movie musical Anchors Away. Say, Joe, says Jerry the Mouse, why ain't you wearing your uniform? And Gene Kelly looks down, and he's still wearing his outfit from Singing in the Rain set, and he can feel his mind slipping. It's cracking at the edges. And sure, he was in Anchors Away, but obviously back then, there was no mouse for him to look at when he was on set. He just danced, and then later on, an animator drew frame by frame to match Kelly's movements to create Jerry the Mouse. But now, here was an apparently living, breathing cartoon mouse. A cartoon mouse that was increasingly growing impatient. You can't dance without your uniform, says Jerry, his eyes starting to glow a dull red. Must have left it in my trailer, stammers Gene, looking for an exit. Can't be having that, says Jerry, who starts to move closer, and Gene's courage breaks, and he makes a dash for it, running away from the humanoid mouse. Fortunately, he's in very, very good physical condition, and he makes his getaway. He runs out of the throne room and sees nothing. It's a void, as if this whole reality is restricted to just that one throne room space. And then he sees that the space behind him is moving away from him. It's getting smaller. And then he comes to understand he's actually falling. But there's no wind, there's no sound, there's no sensation of falling, but the room is moving away as if he has just wandered off the edge of the universe itself, and he feels a deep sense of dread creep into him. He opens his mouth to scream, and no sound emerges. That is until he falls through yet another one of those weird orange portal things, and he finds himself sliding along a road toward a large gate. His momentum has carried him forward, but he's actually still on his feet. This dimension is apparently at 90-degree angle from the last one, and it's only Gene Kelly's amazing athleticism that allows him to stay upright. And he comes to a stop just in front of the wooden gate, which looks kind of familiar. It's very large, and next to it is a sign that reads, Musketeers Headquarters. Oh no, Gene says, and soon he is surrounded by people in vaguely medieval to Renaissance era outfits. You know, a collection of outfits that are drawn across centuries of real history, but it's the 1940s Hollywood idea of what France was like in 1625, and a whole bunch of the people around him have these silly wigs on and not so silly swords in their hands. Hold on, fellas, says Gene, I just got turned around. Well, one of the fellows in question looks at another and says, Porthos, I believe he is speaking English. And he says this in English. English, says the fellow, presumably Porthos. But we do not understand English, Aramis. We are French, he says, also in English. Gene, seeing that this is going to be fruitless, makes a wild dash for it, and soon we have an exciting chase through the fake streets of Paris, complete with horses and jumping through windows and stuff. It's parkour before people knew how to call it parkour, and it's phenomenal. And just as Gene is getting out of breath and he can hear the French soldiers closing in, he sees a hint of an orange glow from below a doorway, so he rushes over, forces the door open, reveals another blank space that's where a room should be, and it's only filled with a portal, and he says, here we go again, and jumps in. Zoom. Now he's in a truly alien place. It's this really large building with a big wooden floor. There's an ethereal, beautiful woman who's chatting up a guy in a weird kind of leathery outfit. The woman is wearing roller skates, and they seem pretty chill, all things considered, so he walks up to them. Danny? Asks the guy. Sorry, I think you might be mistaking me for someone else, Gene says. Now the woman looks at him with a puzzled expression, focus on him completely, and she says, "Sonny, this is not Danny." "Well, I mean, he looks a lot like Danny," says the guy. "You know, younger, but they could be father and son," he says. Wait, says Gene. This is not, I have no memory of this. This is not one of my movies, but there's a man here who looks like me, but older." So Sonny, he looks totally flabbergasted, but the young woman just nods slowly. This is going to be one of my movies?" asks Gene. "Well," says the woman, "it's not really your vehicle. You have more of a supporting role in this one." So Sonny looks like a gasping fish, just completely unaware of what is happening. But the woman really seems to have it together. And Sonny ends up saying, wait, what are you talking about? This is real life." And the woman momentarily just ignores him. "Now, I'm not sure how you got here, but we need to get you out." Gene says, "I'm not sure myself, but how can you know about all of this? No one else does. Everyone else is unaware." And she says, "Well, I'm Kira. I'm a muse, which gives me some somewhat odd abilities. For example, knowing that I am in a film and appearing in this form. But then muse works in strange ways." And Gene stares. "Well, it certainly does." Kira turns to Sonny. "We will fix this. I know it's confusing, but you've stuck with me so far. Can you trust me a little longer?" And Sonny wordlessly nods yes, and Kira grabs Gene by the hand, pulls him toward the exit of this enormous building. "Right," she says. "Do you know how you got here?" "It beats me," says Gene. "I fell through an orange glowing thing, and I keep ending up in my own movies." "All right, so you are the actor, like the real human, who has played numerous characters, and you're finding yourself cast between the fictional realities you appeared in as an actor. Ones that are still connected to you, but they aren't real," says Kira. Gene slowly nods, "and it looks like I'm getting further away from where I started." And Kira nods, and there's a serious expression on her face. "This looks like we need to talk to Dad. Come on." And so she pulls him toward a brick wall with a mural on it, and effortlessly she passes into the mural, and Gene, after steadying himself, does the same. And he finds himself in a strange kind of ethereal, cloudy place, sort of like the void from earlier, but not as menacing. And he hears an enormous voice coming from all around him at once. "Goodness, those sorcerers really did muck things up, didn't they?" says the voice. "Righto, we'll sort this out, at least for you. From what I'm seeing here, this is going to have quite the ripple effect, but at least we can get you to where you should be," says the voice. "Thank you, Zeus?" says Gene Kelly. "Oh, right, forgot to introduce myself. Yeah, sorry about that. But here we go." And in front of Gene opens a new orange portal. He hears Zeus say, "This one will get you back to your own reality. Just keep an eye out. It might take a few minutes for me to close down all the gaps to make sure you stay there." Gene, figuring that this is the least weird thing that has happened to him in the last several minutes, thanks Zeus and steps through right onto the set of Singing in the Rain. "There you are," says Donald O'Connor. "We've been looking everywhere for you. Why did you go and take a long lunch or something?" Gene looks around a moment, realizes no one has noticed that he was even gone other than being absent for a little bit. He just grins. He says, yep, that's exactly it. Sorry, had to clear my head. "Are we ready?" "Ready for you," says Donald. "It's the title number." And so Gene quickly gets his makeup touched up, prepares himself, and does the first take of the song Singing in the Rain. And this is why. This is real, my friends. If you watch Singing in the Rain to this very day, and you are very, very carefully paying attention, you will notice a small, almost imperceptible moment when Gene Kelly hesitates for just a split second in the song, and you might wonder why. Word is, he had to skip over the edge of one of those portals. As for the sorcerer responsible for the whole mess, that's another story entirely. And I'll probably get to find out what it is a year from now. The end.
That was amazing. That was so brilliant. First of all, it's a shame that Spider-Man was playing, was cast to play Fred Astaire and not Gene Kelly, Chris Evans, because that would have been a really amazing tie-in. Second of all, Gene Kelly was in Starlight Express.
Xanadu. He was Xanadu. In Xanadu.
Okay.
Olivia Newton-John.
For some reason, I thought that was Starlight Express.
No. Starlight Express was never made into a film, as far as I know. I mean, if it was, I definitely have to watch it. But no, Xanadu was really one of Gene Kelly's last films. But it starred Olivia Newton-John as the muse Kira. And this just tells me, Ariel, that you're going to have to come over to my place and I will show you the movie Xanadu, because it's very cheesy. It's very much a product of its time, which is the early 80s. And I absolutely, unironically love it to pieces. So
that's
for those who didn't pick up on the other references, Anchors Away, obviously that's a classic Gene Kelly film, and Jerry the Mouse does appear in it. An American in Paris is another one. That was one of the ones where he really started to get a lot of notoriety early on. Still gets produced as a pretty popular stage play, stage musical these days. So yeah, I was definitely referencing other actual Gene Kelly movies. Xanadu is just one that it's not really a Gene Kelly movie. He really did just appear kind of as a supporting character. He's in it a lot. Like, it's not like he appears for a cameo and disappears, but he's not the primary character.
That's awesome. And I love how you brought in a real thing and a real movie into the end just to make it extra Twilight Zone-y.
Really, that's to force people to watch Singing in the Rain as closely as possible to determine whether or not what I told you is even remotely true. Does he hesitate? Is there a moment where he just hesitates for a second? You're just going to have to watch that and find out.
Yeah. And then if you see it, you should write us and tell us.
If you don't see it, you should write us and tell us. That way we covered all the bases.
Yes. Yes. Also, Jonathan, I absolutely loved your mashup. I loved it.
And if you would like to write in, maybe you have your own thoughts of a mashup, whether it's this one, or maybe you've got suggestions for mashups we should do in the future. Maybe there's just something else you want us to talk about as far as geek culture is concerned. Let us know. The best way to do that is you can send us an email. The address for the show is lnc@iheartmedia.com.
Yeah, and you can also reach us on social media. On Facebook and Instagram, we are Large Nerds on Collider. On Twitter, we're LNC_podcast. And if you really like the show, make sure to tell your friends, share episodes, rate us, write reviews. That really helps grow our audience and our friends and our family, because the more people we can goof off with, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, this is a lot of fun. We want to keep doing it. In order for us to keep doing it, we're going to be straight with y'all. We need y'all to get more people listening. Do it. Mm-hmm. Do it.
Yep.
Gene Kelly would want you to.
That only works for the half of our audience that has watched Singing in the Rain, Jonathan.
Or who have any idea who Gene Kelly is.
Doctor Strange wants you to.
Okay, there, that's better.
Yep.
That's probably more relevant. Well, until next time, I'm Jonathan. Something strange is going on, Strickland.
And I'm Ariel. We've talked the whole night through. Cast it.
The Large Nerdron Collider is a production of iHeartRadio and was created by Ariel Kasten. Jonathan Strickland is the executive producer. The show is produced, edited, and published by Tari Harrison. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring?
but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy. And we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.